AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, we serve southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware on the radio, and people from all over the USA can tune in on the internet simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. If you received a notice this morning about the broadcast, you'll receive one this afternoon that will let you hear the rebroadcast, and I ask that you send it around to family members and friends as you do so often, and let's get more people involved in our campaign. I want to first of all say thank you to Mark Andel, founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Conley, a small business advocate and SCORE mentor, Rich Logis, principal of RJL Technology, and our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky. I'm Michael Blihash, always happy to be with you here. Well, last week we had a very busy week. In fact, we had a very busy month with a lot of festivals, and last Sunday was the Pulaski Day Parade in Philadelphia, and there's going to be a lot of ongoing events during the month of October as well. Well, I'm really proud to promote the campaign on our radio program because we're getting more and more people interested. I want to thank the newspapers that are reprinting our weekly commentaries, the radio broadcasters, and also all of you that are spreading the word. On the broadcast last Sunday, we had several promos during the hour and a half broadcast of the Pulaski Day Parade, which the ratings were 100,000 plus television sets watching the parade. So we had a good response. And of course, American Workers Radio had several responses on there as well. And as we continue our efforts to unite our fellow Americans, I want to thank our panel members, Rich, Larkin, Mark, Henry, and our special guests throughout the year, and especially a very special guest who has a lot to say and has so much knowledge to share that sometimes when people stop me, they say, wow, why aren't these people on TV more? Every day they should be up there sharing events and efforts to get people together. Well, I'm pleased to say that our guest today is Curtis Ellis, the executive director of the American Jobs Alliance. Many of you know that we said in past broadcasts that he worked in Congress on campaigns and journalism. He also served as a senior policy advisor to President Trump. And for our listeners that are new, Mr. Ellis was also a writer and producer for CNN, NBC News, Associated Press. He has lots of print and commentaries, and also is now a proud supporter and participant of American Workers Radio. And I'm really, really pleased to welcome Mr. Ellis, because this week especially, people were talking about the Wozniak deal and using American parts and what happened to the cell phone industry in the USA. I'm glad to hear that people listen and they take note of these special things. Curtis, how is everything with you?
Everything's great. The fight goes on, the fight for American jobs. We have made such incredible progress with the election of President Donald J. Trump. All of the issues that you've been talking about, that I've been talking about for years, that were considered fringe, are now mainstream. The idea of putting American citizens and American workers and the nation of America first before the interests of some internationalist global economy, folks, that's so old, that's outdated. We're in a new world global economy. We can't think about ourselves anymore. There's no place for a United States of America in a global economy. It's just all one big happy family. Get with the program. Well, now that attitude is considered bizarre. It's now acceptable to talk about what's good for our people, what's good for the American people, what's good for the American worker. That's not selfish. That's not. There's nothing wrong with that. And that's how we're gonna. That's how we're gonna have a good society. And that's actually, to contradict everybody, that's how we're actually gonna lift the world up. You know, it's, you can't take care of anybody. You can't help anybody else if you're not in good shape yourself. That's why we take care of ourselves, our bodies. And that's why we take care of our family. I can't help my neighbor if I'm sick and if my neighbor, if my family is destitute. And it works on a national level as well. So we're making great progress. There's a whole lot of work to be done. There's still people that are, you know, pushing back. But, you know, I feel great. I feel like it's just... there's a lot of fights ahead of us, but we're in, and there always will be, but we're in much better shape to take those fights on than we were a year ago.
And many people are now beginning to agree that it's time for us to move up and move forward and cut all the bull. You know, sometimes I watch this national news media stuff and there's nothing I want to see anymore. I'm really sick and tired of hearing everything that is wrong without having a balance of what's right and what we can do more to build up what's good for the country. The fact
that
the lack of concern for jobs in America really brought us where we are today, and it's not going to get better unless we stick together and really help our fellow Americans. Mark texted earlier today, and I wanted you to, you know, talk about this with him as well. Mark mentioned that he needs skilled workers. Mark, tell us what your thoughts on that text were.
Yeah, welcome, everybody. Hello, Mike, Curtis, and I'm not sure, Larkin's on, and Rich, and all our listeners. Mike, there's such a large skilled work shortage, so CBS had sent out or had aired a special Sunday finally, but to me, again, I own General Welding and Fabricating. I got two plants, one in Buffalo, one in Rochester, and then we got the Made in America stores. But we are blessed with oil and mining work. Military contracts are back. Our everyday work, we cannot find welders. And, Mike, we've talked about this for years on the radio, the skilled trade shortage. We've talked about PTEC program I'm involved with, Dream It, Do It. We've worked with Penn College. We've worked with, which is pretty big right now, Alfred State, Ohio Tech. But myself and our customers, it's becoming such a big problem that we're grabbing from the same pool. There's only so many welders. The average age of a welder is between 60 and 70 years old. And fitters are even worse, people that fit up before you weld. And you can get in a machinist and all the skilled trades. And we know it was a mistake, a 35-year mistake. I do blame parents, guidance counselors, for taking the metal shops and wood shops out of schools. I think every child, it can't be one size fits all. It has to be, give them a choice. College, I never down, but if they want to work with their hands, go to a tech school, or I want metal shop and wood shop at minimum back in school starting in eighth grade, because I want to expose, even if you're going to become a doctor, these new kids can't even put a hammer. They don't know what to do with a hammer or a screwdriver, the simple basic tools. Now, we have such a shortage. Right now, I could use 10, 20, 30 welders. I've got more work than I could use, but I didn't have that for 2-3 years, so it's an opportunity for me to get out of a big debt hole. The frustrating part is, Mike and guys, that you can't find these welders, so you get a young kid that might have drive and some ambition that never had a hammer or a screwdriver in his hand, so you're starting from scratch. The culture had changed, so the work ethic is gone. We're always looking for a farmer work ethic, somebody that really knows and understands what he has, the drive and ambition. But this skilled work shortage, CBS started to expose it. There are no workers out there. We cannot grow this economy without finding a solution, but we need workers now. So I've started our own school on Saturdays. We just talked with before the show, Mike, with about three guys. We have such a problem, and my customer has such a problem. We just have to address this, and it should be talked every day. So I was very happy that CBS brought it on Sunday morning. I was sent a link from my brother-in-law. And really, people are starting to notice this. Like, wow, we absolutely have a problem. So I want your guys' thoughts on this. And, Curtis, maybe you can answer first.
Well, you bring up a real good point. And the skilled worker shortage is real. it's very real. And this is a direct result of having offshored so many of our industries. It's a direct result of a couple of things. But one of them is having offshored our industries, we're not training the people to do those jobs that are required to do those jobs. It's kind of a circle here, and it's a vicious circle. Most learning occurs by doing. It's learning by doing. You don't learn from a book. You learn from experience. And most of the training that happens, you can't learn to be a carpenter purely from a book. Now, from a book, you learn how to add, subtract, what those numbers mean on the tape measure. But when you're on the job, that's how you learn to measure twice and cut once. It's only by doing, making the mistake, learning the hard way. And as I was saying last week, for example, with engineers, the lack of line engineers, we could not open a Foxconn-type plant in America to produce Apple computers the way we used to, because the line engineers, not the research engineers, not the quantum physicists, but the line engineers, were lacking them because there haven't been any jobs for them. That's one of the causes of this lack of skilled workers. The other cause is a cultural cause. We have been taught, our culture for years now has been drilling into everybody's head that everyone's going to go to college. And if you don't go to college, you're some kind of dummy. I believe somebody said it's like using drugs. You're just stupid, and you're a lowlife if you're not training to be a lawyer or a hedge fund manager or private equity flim-flam artist. Somebody who works with their hands or likes to work outdoors is somehow a Neanderthal knuckle-dragger. Well, that's ridiculous. We have lost the whole idea of the dignity of work. They still give lip service to it in some quarters in this country, but the idea that there is dignity, we work because we must work, because that's what builds character. That is in our nature, like walking upright. It's in our nature to work. That's the meaning of these stories that you read in the Bible, where God instructed man, you will earn your bread by the sweat of your brow. That does not mean there's a life sentence of hard labor. It means that is your nature. You get fulfillment from your work. The fulfillment of your work does not come from buying a sports car with the paycheck you get at the end of the week. The fulfillment comes from the work itself, and it doesn't matter what the work is. You know, we point to a Wall Street hedge fund manager or a mathematician who can figure out some algorithm and equation to predict high-speed trading to make $1 billion on a nanosecond stock market automated trade, and we say, gee, that person's a genius. But you look at a farmer who can produce food from dirt, and we say that person's stupid. I mean, that's an extreme example, but why is a farmer any less intelligent than a mathematician? I can't coax food from dirt. I don't know how to take care of an animal. I don't know how to give birth to a lamb, but a farmer does. That's a skilled profession, just like a plumber. Hand me a wrench and a lead pipe cinch, and it, the best I can do is maybe make a flower pot out of it. You know, I'm not going to be able to give you running water and indoor plumbing in your house. But I'll tell you what. I, a long time ago, I learned that the lifespan extension of man, of human beings in our society, has more to do with indoor plumbing than it does with all the pharmaceutical advancements in history. It is only through indoor plumbing and the separation of fresh water from wastewater that we live as long as we do. So, you know, next time somebody sneers at a plumber, remember, that's why we live to be 70 years old instead of dying when we're 40. So you can thank the plumber. So, you know,
very well said.
The culture has a lot to do with it. You know, and something I'd like to talk about here for a moment is another fallacy in our culture. And along with everybody's got to go to college. That's one of the big lies. The other big lie is we have a new service economy, right? Nobody's going to make things anymore. We're all going to be working in services, dog walkers, a massage therapist, or, you know, financial service advisors, right? And then the third big lie is big is better. The multinational corporations are the ones that are going to save America and provide the engine for our economy. No, it's local business. It's the independent business. It's the independent operator. And now, this coming Monday, and I talked about this a couple weeks ago on the show, that the example is with this renewable fuel stuff, this ethanol. This idea of the big guys are the ones that get special favors from the government, and we're told that it's because it's the big guys who propel our economy forward. And so the government gives special breaks to the multinational companies. And it hits the little guy right in the neck. And the best example of this right now is this renewable fuel standard that every refiner has to add ethanol to their fuel because ethanol burns cleaner and it's good for the air and, you know, yada, yada, yada. Whether that's true or not, I'll leave that aside. But the fact of the matter is it's, the large multinational companies are making the ethanol, and they are blending the ethanol, but the government requires small refiners like Monroe Energy and Philadelphia Energy Solutions. They're responsible, and they get hit with the expense of mixing the ethanol. Well, anyway, this is a long buildup to tell everybody that on Monday there's a rally to protect the refiner jobs. Monroe Energy is being forced to lay off employees because of this renewable fuel standard, which is completely rigged to help the big multinational global oil companies at the expense of independent local refineries. And this rally on Monday is taking place down at the Monroe Energy refinery in Trainer, Pennsylvania. That's down there between Billy and Wilmington on the Delaware River.
Marcus Hook area.
Yeah, exactly. Just go past Harris Casino. Keep going. You'll get there. Monday, October 9th at 10 a.m. in the C4 parking lot. They're going to have some elected officials there, members of the Philadelphia Building Trades. You're going to have local business leaders. And, of course, the employees, the ones that are left, thank you, the employees of Monroe Energy, PBF Energy, and Philadelphia Energy Solutions. And that's Monday, October 9th. See, this is part of the scam, one of the big scams that's been forced on us. So we weren't allowed to talk about until Donald Trump started talking about America First. America First means the independent operator, the independent small guy. And, you know, by standards today, even Donald Trump is a small businessman. You know, he's an independent, the Trump Organization, independent, family-owned business. And compared to the global Fortune 50 companies, he's a small business. He's just like a small fish. Well, no matter what anybody in the audience may think of Donald Trump, besides the fact that I love him, this rally on Monday is not about Donald Trump. It's about the protecting our local jobs, the refinery jobs down there at Monroe Energy. There is this EPA regulation that requires the local independent refineries, they're on the hook to demonstrate about, to show that they're doing this renewable fuel ethanol blending in the gasoline supply, even though they don't have the resources to do that. And it's purely a big fix. It's a big fix for the multinationals.
Curtis, I have a question to ask you. When did all this come about, that this started? I'm going to go to Larkin. When did this come about, and who has been forcing it down their throat?
Do you want me to answer that?
Yes,
or do you want Larkin
I'm
going to. Yeah, it started in 2007. Is when they wrote this renewable fuel standard. But what's interesting is the way they did it. They didn't just say blanket rule, everybody's got to put ethanol in their gasoline. They said that, but then they took it one step further and they created this trading system. And it's really a rigged game that helps Wall Street and helps the big deal. They came up with these paper credits. It's a little complicated, so I'll just try to simplify it here. They came up, it's like the cap and trade scheme, that you get a credit for every gallon of ethanol you make. And this paper credit for each gallon of ethanol can then be traded. And it's traded by the Wall Street flim-flam artists. And who has to buy them? Oh, well, we're going to have the local refiners, the small guys like Monroe Energy, they're forced to buy these credits. They can't blend ethanol. That's not what they do. But they're going to be required to blend ethanol. But instead of making them build a blending facility, we'll just let them trade these paper credits, buy and sell them. And it started in 2007, and it's been ramped up ever since.
Larkin Connolly.
Michael Brihas. Good morning, everybody. How are you?
How are you?
Curtis, good morning. How are you?
Great.
Good. Listen, I have two comments about what you said a little bit earlier, and I'm definitely not trying to throw water on this because I think everybody listening and everybody certainly on our staff knows how committed I am to the Made in America movement and the fact that we need to correct that. But correct as Mark so aptly says, this 30-year mistake that we've made. I think there are two things that we have to couch your comments with, and that is the fact that we are, as a manufacturing nation, completely devoid of any supply chain whatsoever. There is no supply chain. It is collapsed from the top to the bottom. So not only can we not build toasters or anything that plugs in, but we don't make the component parts necessary to, nor can we source them anywhere in our country. So our need to build a manufacturing concern in this country goes all the way back almost to the stone, the round stone that the cavemen learned how to roll. I mean, it goes that deeply. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I don't think we said anything about is the conundrum that is being created by our natural evolvement into a world of technology. It's not going to replace plumbers. It's not going to replace a lot of people that work with their hands. But as far as the industrial world is concerned, automation is going to have a huge effect. And somewhere along the line, we need to address that and add that into the conversation to face its very development.
Now, absolutely right. When we moved these supply chains overseas, we lost the know-how, the skilled workers, and we lost the technology as well. I started down this path a dozen years ago. I was making a documentary looking for Mr. Coffee. And basically, it would take apart the purpose of the documentary. The subject was to look at everything that goes into making a Mr. Coffee, a countertop coffee maker. All of the technology, all the know-how, and all the jobs. It was, you go to the store and the Mr. Coffee machine is made in China. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means we've lost the jobs that go into plastic injection molding to make the plastic case of the Mr. Coffee machine. It means we've lost the glass-making industry to make the carafes. It means we've lost the know-how to make the nichrome wire, which is the heating element inside, maybe the metallurgical skill to make nichrome, an alloy of nickel and chromium, the steel stamping, and you just go down and all the way down to the industrial laundry that washed the uniforms of the people who worked in those various facilities. That's a whole lot of jobs and a whole lot of paychecks, a whole lot of tax revenue, and a whole lot of technological know-how. So then you have to ask, well, what is the best way forward when we do have Are we going to integrate our economy, or how? The question is not if, it's how do we integrate our national economy into the global economic and technological system? And it's been looked at in a rather one-sided fashion. Well, what is most efficient? And the definition of efficient is what makes the highest profit for the biggest company, rather than what is best for the people of this country. It might be more efficient to import Mr. Coffee machines from China, where you can pay people a dollar a day in these various jobs, but that doesn't mean it's best for the people of the United States. Maybe we should have decentralized technology, that there should be plastic molding facilities, small businesses that do plastic injection molding. They should exist in Pennsylvania and South Carolina and North Carolina as well, instead of having them all in Shenzhen, China, that supplies the world. And that, again, is, are we better off with one giant refinery owned by ExxonMobil BP down on the Gulf Coast, or do we want smaller refineries spread around the country, including places like Pennsylvania? Are we going to just have one big company produce everything? Are we going to make China the manufacturing workshop of the world, or will we have manufacturing facilities and know-how spread around the world? Yeah. Are we going to have a monoculture, or will we have ecological diversity?
And I'd like to just add something, Curtis Larkin, with what I'm faced with right now, this skilled work shortage and the welder shortage. And I just bid and was entertained about a job because I'm known for getting a job done, but it's for China, which is very interesting. It's a large industrial piece. It would take 40 welders a day for 7 weeks, and it's a tight deadline on it. And reason it's interesting, and my other customer deals with Germany a lot. Germany has a similar problem. This isn't just the United States, I want to be clear with. And why would China use us to build something is because quality parts on time. One of the larger problems is quality over there, and even more large is lead times. They can't hit the lead times. It's a major problem making that product on time correctly, especially if they're high tech. So these are problems Germany, my customer, has. I always like the German way because in ninth grade, you bring them students in, you tie them and kind of interface them with the company. And the student gets used to the company, and then he asks the company, what would you like us to learn? And then they kind of go to schooling for that. So it's the German way. But right now, Germany's having some problems still finding their quality's down right now. I know from my customer that has a plant there. And right now, this is such a large problem. And you guys, and Larkin, you're absolutely right. The supply chain, we've talked about it many, 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 many times from the tool and die guys. Everybody's, it's broken down. But we have a problem right now today. Like I just mentioned, a job, I need 40 welders a day for just one job for a seven-week period. And again, it's hard to, can we find more? How do we get these schools? How do we get, and I think, Curtis, you hit it on the head with your, you know, what you said, cultural change and all that we need. But how do we get them to react? Is it me going to do more speeches at schools and saying, hey, you can make six figures as a welder? How do we make the change for the parents and guidance counselors to stop setting, you know, you could go to two-year terms. You can get, everybody, I think, should have a two-year degree at minimum. But how do we make that change right now in schools? And I believe it has to be in eighth grade, where the student's young enough to kind of, where they start forming. My daughter's in 10th grade. They're in ninth grade, everything starts happening. How do we make that change and kind of start making them aware, like, wow, they might have something there? If you learn a skilled trade, you might not ever starve. You might have a great living.
I think you're right. Making speeches at schools, starting
you know, how
very
do we
young.
Do that? Yeah.
And I think we have to make speeches not just to the students at schools, but as you said, to the guidance counselors and to the teachers.
This How do we light their light bulb up, you know?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You have to light the brightest bulb. Yeah. And to me, the brightest bulb is where the money is. And where's the money?
Right.
It's at the board. It's at the Board of Education. It's the people who are elected to oversee that school system and say, this is how we want to educate our kids.
The people that never worked with their hands for a living, Larkin.
Pardon?
That's a tough one, huh?
the people who never worked with their hands for a living, Larkin, are the people running all the school boards.
Their children.
Yeah, but
why don't we work on world peace first?
they're not idiots, though. And maybe they are, but I've got to believe that somebody's got to sit down and explain it. I don't hear it. I go to an occasional school board meeting. I don't ever hear them talking about this.
You know, Larkin, after the Depression, if you study the Depression, after the Depression, America wanted to rise up and they wanted to, get into every industry possible to make sure that they were shipping everything out of America around the world. Curtis, whatever happened to the desire of the American people to be the most competitive industrial giant in the world? And by the way, who convinced the American people that allowing all of our jobs to go overseas was not going to kill our financial stability?
Well, I think Curtis told us that the last time. And Curtis, I'll clear the way for you. I mean, I think you spoke about that very fact the last time you were on.
Oh, that's right. Well, you have the best and the brightest, so all those geniuses that never worked with their hands, who went to Harvard and Yale, who decided we were going to have who said the future is in a service economy. And what they meant was a financial services economy, but they didn't want to put it that way. They didn't want to be so honest. They thought America would do well, or at least their part of America would do well, being the bankers to the world. And then they were aided and abetted in their ridiculous crusade by the folks at the State Department. And again, this really follows on the heels of World War II, where they decided, the State Department said, well, the way, and with some friends over in the Pentagon, that we're going to save the world from communism by building stable and prosperous democracies around the world. And the way we're going to do that is by giving them our industries. We're basically going to give these countries like Japan and South America and other places around the globe access to sell into the American market. We're going to lower our tariffs and let them make stuff and sell it to America, even as those countries erect tariff barriers so we can't sell into their market. And what that will do is it will build up middle classes around the world and stable societies and perhaps even democratic ones. And those countries will not be tempted to become communist. They won't go with the Soviet Union in the great battle of wills known as Cold War. Well, it worked really well for the other countries. But you do that for 70 years, and what you've done is you've impoverished America. You've impoverished Americans, and you've destroyed all of our industries because we've moved all the supply chains overseas. We've moved not just the supply chains, the entire production from raw material to finished goods, now taking place everywhere. And with the end of the Cold War, what happened is all those geniuses in the State Department, Defense Department, in Washington, and in academia, they forgot why we were doing that. And now it's just become they're on autopilot, and it's become an end in itself. Well, now we have to build up the whole world. Even though there is no communist menace, we're just, such good folks, and it's our duty to build up the rest of the world. So we're going to continue opening our market, lowering tariffs, and let everything be made overseas. Now, that's what the high IQ morons in Washington are saying. Meanwhile, the folks on Wall Street and in the corner suites of the global corporations, they let everybody say we're doing it out of the goodness of our hearts. But what they're really doing is they're getting very cheap labor, a dollar a day labor over in East Asia to produce the goods that they then sell in Foot Locker stores or the Nike stores with a high markup. I'll tell you what, the price of sneakers has not come down since I was a child. It's gone up. Sneakers used to be made in America. You could buy your Keds for, I don't know what they were, $20, $30 if they were that much. Now the sneakers are made in Vietnam, where people are paid $1 a day, and they sell for $150. So, you know, it's not out of the goodness of the heart that we have outsourced all of our industries.
Well, one of the things that really concerns me is all these years, say 30 years, as Mark says, it's a 30-year mistake. How in the last 30 years did no national leader, did no state leader get up and say, we can't allow this to continue. We have to do something about it. Have you seen that through your efforts, Curtis, where there is a leader in Washington or one of the states that said, we got to stop this?
Well, you had Duncan Hunter, congressman from Southern California. He would stand up and say this. You had Pat Buchanan when he ran for president back in the 90s. He said it. But you're right, there are very few. And then Donald Trump came along and said it. And he had to fight off 16 other Republicans and then one globalist challenger from the Democratic Party. But no, there are very few national leaders that stood up and said this. Those who did, Ross Perot, another one, were ridiculed. They're thinking, get with the program. This is a global economy. It's all wonderful. What are you talking about? We have global supply chains now. I mean, this is just fancy talk. Global supply chains, global economy. What are we talking about here?
You know, if they were giving jobs outside to different countries, that would be one thing. But when they saw for the last 30 years that there were no new jobs being created here in America, how are we going to keep the American people employed? How are they going to support themselves, pay their taxes, and be quality citizens? No one talked about it. You're right. It's maybe three or four people that I know in my head that did it, but there's no one except Donald Trump right now pushing the issue.
You know, guys, I've got great Americans coming to my store in Elma now. 37 tour buses from out of state we just handled in 3 weeks. They're coming in. We're going to hit 700 in a week here in the last 7 years, which is unbelievable. But they got the heart and soul of America. Mike, me and you talked about it. They're from Wichita, Kansas. And if it's Rockwell, they work for Boeing. Church Group just bought 30 of my shirts. They want to wear the one because China's a long drive to work. We got ones wearing it at Rockwell because they're threatening to take more overseas, and they want to wear these through their plants. These people that are coming in from the breadbasket of America in the middle, they are fired up. They got tough hands. They got jeans on, no earrings or tattoos. They're farmers. They put themselves through school with a second job. They served our country. And I'm seeing Americans that come in. You know, and you're right, Curtis, with Donald Trump, this is our, you know, we always said this was our last chance, but true Americans, when they come off these buses, they love what I'm about. They can't believe we don't make a toaster. How did we get here? So, I mean, there's hope out here, but we got to all start listening. This demographic of 50 to 97 years old I'm meeting has to talk to our youth.
That's right. That's right. Have to talk to the youth. Have to talk to the teachers. Have to talk to the guidance counselors. I was talking with, pardon me, this fella down in North Carolina has a plastic injection molding company. They make the dashboards for the BMW plants down in South Carolina. They've got, you know, big contracts. They do a lot of good stuff, but it's a family-owned business, and they have an apprenticeship program. And they take kids in high school and start training them while they're still in high school. And they keep them in school, and they work a shift. By the end of the training program, the end of the apprenticeship, they're earning money while they're working, while they're learning a very highly skilled trade. And at the end of the program, they can be earning $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year. They have no student debt, no debt. They're debt-free. They're set for life. They're earning really good money. He said one of the hardest things they had in recruiting kids was convincing the parents that there is a future in that kind of work.
Yeah. So. Oh, you know what, Curtis? I have to tell you, doing a few job fairs in the last few months, these are the type of people that are needed, yet they're not coming out of our schools. Sewing machine operators, that may sound like, wow, that's a tough job. We have more people looking to open up operations where they sew clothes and shirts and everything else. Tailors, almost impossible to find because all the suits are now imported, ready to go, with the exception of maybe somebody sizes you up and does the cuffs and the sleeves. Industrial machinery mechanics, people to keep the stuff on the line working. I go to the job fair and they say, Michael, send me industrial machinery mechanics. Even if they don't have that much, we'll be able to do what Mark is doing. Electricians, how can we not have enough electricians? Well, part of the problem here is that they send the stuff over from overseas. When it breaks, they just send you another motherboard to put it in the machine or the computer or whatever. And then you have no people here with that skill. Another thing is boiler operators. Even in the schools, they can't find boiler operators to keep the kids warm, to keep, make sure that all the levels are perfect. It's hard. Machinists, welders.
Yeah.
I mean, where in the hell has the leadership of the country been?
Yeah, guys, I want to be perfectly clear. I love children. I work with them. We started the school. But I don't blame the child or the student as much as the parents and guidance counselors. You know, they can't go to school. They can be first of their class in college, but you can't go to school for common sense, drive, and ambition. The work ethic is lost. The drive is lost. Saving money is lost. You know, the kids kind of run the schools. We got to get tougher. We got to educate them, though, and make this okay. It's just they're smart kids, but most of the work ethic is down. I just have a group meetings with our managers, just one this morning. Again, we're trying to really figure this out. But I think you guys just hit it on. They can make good money. We just got to make it – somehow the stigma's got to be lifted. It's okay. It's not one size fits all.
You know, guys, every month of November, we highlight American Made Month. This year is our third anniversary, and I'd like us to do something special to promote the jobs that I just mentioned and many more that are out there. People are pleading with them. The biggest problem we have is the supply chain, number one, and number two, if you can start a company, but if you don't have the mechanics, you don't have the people, you don't have the salespeople to do what they need to do to move your product on the market, nothing goes anywhere.
Are they explaining to the student that you can have less debt if you go into skilled trades? You won't have a six-figure loan, that you might not have a job. You might be able to become a teacher, but it might have to be in South Korea. They got to be honest with them.
You know, Curtis, I want to mention to everyone there, because I do talk about this, especially on my Saturday show, mentioning these job fairs. When you go there, there are so many beautiful people, nicely dressed, beautiful resumes, but they're not the jobs that are needed today. History majors and all, that's not what is really in demand. They're talking turkey to me. I need the first line supervisor and manager for my retail sales. Somebody who's done that in school, history, arts, and everything else is not going to do it. Quality control technicians, administrative assistants, accounting clerks, people who know, you know, everything about, you know, what it takes, the new technology to put this stuff in the computer, print out the daily receipts and results, they're not there.
Ideally, in school, you would learn how to learn. That's what we should be taught. Learn how to learn so that when you get out of school, you're capable of learning. You're capable of picking up, you're curious, and you have the discipline and the basic skills to learn, because everything's constantly changing. In addition, and it's on the job that you learn the specifics. You were talking about the German model. Most of the apprenticeship programs in Germany are done in small and medium-sized businesses. We hear about Mercedes, we hear about Siemens, we hear about BMW. That's not who's driving the apprenticeship programs and the training programs in Germany. It's the smaller subcontractors that sell to the Siemens, that sell to the Mercedes, and sell to the BMWs of Germany that are doing the on-the-job training. And the German model also includes support for those small and medium-sized enterprises. They didn't buy into, we're going to have one big global corporation that's going to support the whole country. They know that doesn't work. They give tax breaks. They've written a tax code, and they've written their entire economic model to support the small guy and the medium-sized enterprise. They even have carve-outs, but they're cognizant of the people and the companies and the architects that design the concrete pads that machines are mounted on. And they make sure that that company, which has been a family-owned business for three generations or five generations, is going to be there for the next five generations. We've let all of that go in this country, and that's part of this culture, that this cultural rot of misdirection that's got to be turned around. We've got to inculcate the work value. We've got to respect the dignity of work in all of its forms. And we've got to reinvigorate the small and medium-sized enterprise that is the backbone of Main Street and the backbone of our society.
You know, there's no question to that. And the thing is, in Philadelphia, if you graduate as an electrician or a carpenter, then all you have to do is try to navigate your way through a union that has no respect for you or what you do, and makes you go through a wildly crazy apprentice program that has absolutely nothing to do with anything. And they control what you eat, where you go, how you dress. I mean, it's absolute insanity. There's so many obstacles that have to be navigated in our movement. It's ridiculous.
Curtis, I want to ask you something. Having worked in Congress, is there any way you can suggest that there be a committee that has to begin its work and end its work in a certain amount of time, present their plans to the president as to how we can get our trades and all the technology skills back in our schools? Is there a congressional committee that could be appointed by the president or you know, by each side of the aisle or whatever to move forward?
Well, I can tell you we can do better than that. I'm really glad you brought that up. The U.S. Department of Labor now, in the Trump administration, the Secretary of Labor, Alexander Acosta, has made apprenticeship his number one priority. Revamping, rebuilding, building and rebuilding the apprenticeship program, encouraging them. He's talked with the president about this. He's talked with Ivanka Trump about this. This is the number one priority for the Department of Labor, which, by the way, the Department of Labor spends billions of dollars on workforce training, these Job Corps centers, which now that I don't work in that bureaucracy anymore, I can tell you a lot of these Job Corps centers are not producing, are not training people with the skills that are needed.
And Mark Handel needs.
The Secretary of Labor recognized that and says we got to change it.
Hmm. Well, that's very interesting. I want to say to you, is the Department of Labor and Industry, are they making a plan like a thermometer? Larkin suggested a thermometer be made, and I love that idea, and I've been thinking about that, Larkin. How we can say where we are today, October 2017, and how have we increased businesses, small businesses, how have we increased more schools focusing now on the trades and things like that? Who in the Department of Labor would help make something like that a national focus?
Well, it would be the Employment Training Administration within the Department of Labor. I would say go through and hammer on your senators and hammer on your congressmen to make sure they're on board. As far as a particular thermometer, to show, I'm not sure how they're measuring their progress, but my general experience in government is you got to keep the heat on these guys to get any results.
The biggest problem with doing anything, Curtis, it's like in Erie County, Ted Morton, tried to get this Made in America Act going. That was great. He had a goal. He wanted to get it before the people in the November election, that they would vote yes or no, in addition to the legislators and the county executive, Mark Poloncarz. But that was a plan. We don't have a national plan that says we are going to get into 10,000 more schools to get electricians, more electricians, learning more technology in the systems that are really needed by America's industries today. There's nothing more discouraging than when people come to the job fairs and say, there's a lot of people came, but very few people qualified for the types of jobs we need in our industries.
Yeah. It's a, as we've been saying, it's a chicken, and to some degree, it's a chicken and egg thing. No, we absolutely need to train the people and train the young people. We need to let them know and let their parents know and let the teachers know that these are good jobs that will pay a good living. And at the same time, I say it's a chicken and egg thing because you need the businesses. The learning is by doing in many cases. The German apprenticeship model, the apprentices, half the time they're in school in a classroom and half the time they're on the job. If we don't have the businesses and the industries and the workshops for people to be learning in, they can't learn. But if we don't have the people to staff the workshops, we can't have the workshop to teach the next person how to do it. Yeah. So it's a complicated situation, which gets me back to, we've got this situation now with the energy engineers and the refineries. And I'll get one reminder in that on Monday at 10 a.m.
That's Columbus Day morning, and people should have off and be able to go out there, whether they're in the energy industry or not.
And if you care about American jobs, and maybe we're retired or not, come down 4101 Post Road in Trainer, Pennsylvania, the Monroe Energy Refinery. We need the EPA to fix this this regulation, which is killing American jobs. And every time shutting down local refineries around the country, that's going to be fewer engineers that can train the next generation of engineers. It's part of the problem here.
What you're saying is we have the noose around our neck. If we don't get out there and stop it, someone will push us off the plank and we will do ourselves in.
Right.
Putting it real nice.
Yeah, that's a very nice image there.
Curtis, I want to mention also, I plead with everybody in that area that's around Chester, Pennsylvania, to go out there on Monday, 10 o'clock. You know where that is, Marcus Hook. Not that hard to get to at all. Get off the Chester exit, go down 9th Street all the way down, and you'll be there. And make sure that you let people know that you're, dissatisfied the way things have been going in America. Curtis, we started a program three years ago, National Small Business Weekend. And what we do is we urge people to go out and support their local businesses, from the hoagie shops to the flower shops and whatever they need, because the local businesses, no matter how many people buy online, the local businesses are still going to be there and they need our support.
Excellent.
And then coming up in the month of November, I know we have several proclamations coming in from the state of Pennsylvania and New Jersey promoting this, but the most important thing we can do is get the people who are in businesses to come out and say, I need more workers, I need more sewers, I need industrial machinery technicians, to let us know what is needed, maybe get them together. It's very tough. The news media has not been helping us along. A lot of them say, well, we can't go against our advertisers. They're representing mainly foreign producers, and we're simply not going to put that on there. Something has got to change. If our system had more money through this American Workers Radio, I would even go further with what we're trying to do. But the big guys are trying to stomp on us, to make us, you know, go away. Like, oh, sooner or later, they'll get tired and go away. That can't happen.
You raise a good point there. The major media is supported, and the newspaper industry, what's left of it, but when it was in its heyday, the newspaper industry is supported by the big retailers who depend on imported goods. And that's part of it's part of why they denigrated the idea of Made in America and the idea of nationalism versus globalism. Don't you get it? Free trade's really good. Well, it's good for you guys because you're importing everything from these slave markets in Asia. Instead of hiring free American labor to make stuff, you'd rather import it from over there.
Yeah.
And that's who the advertisers are. And so in the editorial boards and in the newspaper news columns, they would talk about people like us like we're some kind of idiots.
Well, I'd like to bring up right now, too, Mike and the guys, this is the biggest retail time of year. A lot of people don't grab it. The fourth quarter is what it's all about. A lot of my stores, if you're a retail store, Larkin, you know, it comes down to the last 3 months, but it really comes down to 30 days, Black Friday to Christmas, which is 29 days this year, not that I know. It comes down, and when you're a purchaser, your customer, our listener, buy Made in America products, you'll make your biggest statement then. Support local. This is the time of year. All the rest is just kind of keep the lights on, not even. It all comes down to a month or two now.
That's right. Yep. And as I mentioned, the local stores are hurting because many of them are in communities and the parking is not that good. And going to the big shopping center with the shopping cart is much easier in many cases. But we plead with people to go and shop local. Make sure they speak up. Let people know, because that's what it's all about. Curtis, you know you have to come back. Because I think we've been educating people in a very positive way. I was very pleased with the response that you had from last week's program, and I'm going to ask that you come back. And Mark, I'm going to also ask you to let us know how you're doing with your welding classes there. How are you pulling the people in? What's the success rate? And Larkin, next time we get together, I want to hear how SCORE is doing. And what's the success level these days so that we can get Americans back on the job and more people happy to be that out there working and paying their taxes and raising their family. Larkin, Mark, and Curtis Ellis, thank you for being with us today. You have no idea how important all of us working together has been for the feeling of people. They get a lot of courage from it. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, I wish you and yours the very best. Have a great one, Curtis.
Thank you. Have a great week. Stay hungry.